Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners. Hello, and welcome to As It Is, the current events program from VOA Learning English. Today is December 31st, New Year's Eve. People around the world are marking the end of 2015 and the start of a new year. New York City probably has the most famous New Year's celebration in America. Thousands of people gather in Times Square to watch a huge ball covered with Waterford crystal drop at midnight. Millions of others watch the event on television. In the United States, cities like Las Vegas, New Orleans, and Orlando, Florida also get a lot of attention for their New Year's parties. Of course, major cities around the world also celebrate New Year's Eve in a big way. Hong Kong and Sydney, Australia, are famous for big fireworks shows. Before we head into the new year, let's take a lighthearted look back at some of the stories that were popular on social media. Some of them were very popular and then were forgotten. Others, like the response to the terrorist attack in Paris or Black Lives Matter movement, had a powerful and memorable message. Remember, we tell you about these stories in a slower, easier to understand American English. So, listen as Dan Friedel tells us about 2015's top trending stories.
Big stories grab headlines and capture people's attention on social media channels like YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. 2015 is the year that social media sites turn trends and viral stories into headlines. A story goes viral if it starts small and becomes important as it moves from person to person along social networks. The term comes from the medical term, virus. There were a number of breaking news stories that took over both news headlines and social media channels at the same time. Early in 2015, a group of terrorists attacked the offices of French magazine Charlie Hebdo. They killed 11 people in the magazine's office and wounded 11 others. After several days, the terrorists were killed during a shootout with French police. As people were following the story, the hashtag Je suis Charlie gained momentum. Je suis Charlie translates from French into English as I am Charlie. On November 13th, a different group of terrorists stunned the world with another series of attacks in the French capital. The terrorists killed 129 people and injured hundreds at a concert, at a sporting event, and at restaurants around the city. The hashtag Pray for Paris emerged as a way for people to express sympathy about those attacks and quickly sort through posts on social media sites. But there were other stories that became newsworthy after becoming popular on social media first. By now, everyone has heard of the dress. It started when a woman in Great Britain posted a photo of a dress she liked on the blog Tumblr. She wondered if the dress had blue and black stripes or white and gold stripes. The Tumblr post was not a big deal until one social news website, BuzzFeed, picked up the thread and asked readers to vote on the color of the dress. The poll received more than 3 million votes. The trending hashtag, the dress, and the important debate about its color got people stirred up. On the same day, a silly video of two llamas running loose around an Arizona city captured the attention of everyone online and on cable news networks. Megan Garfola is a digital strategist at Ogilvy Public Relations in Washington, D.C. She says the trending stories of 2015, like the dress, the llamas, and the approval of gay marriage, all had something in common. They were easy to understand.
The barrier for participation needs to be very low in order for people to join in. So, for example, with the dress, you either fell on one side of it or the other. You were either a blue and black fan or you were a white and gold fan. For Love Wins, either you supported the cause or you didn't support the cause. With the llamas, you were either a fan of white llama or black llama. And it was very easy to participate and to share, you know, your feelings on it and how you related to the story in general.
Along with the loose llamas in Arizona, another animal that amused audiences was a rat in the subway of New York City. On most days, a video of a rat would hardly get a retweet. But on this day, an observer happened to be there with his phone when a rat was dragging a slice of pizza down a staircase. The pizza rat video was seen over 8 million times on YouTube since September. Hashtag Pizza Rat suddenly became a social media star. Even Miley Cyrus referenced the Pizza Rat in a Saturday Night Live skit. If you don't remember, the story of Cecil the Lion caught on in July after an American hunter killed a protected lion in Zimbabwe. But one of the most talked about viral animal moments involved not a real animal, but a person dressed as a shark. It came during singer Katy Perry's Super Bowl halftime show. The broadcaster NBC said 114.4 million people in the U.S. watched the Super Bowl. During Perry's song Teenage Dream, two people dressed as sharks served as backup dancers. The performance started off fine. Both sharks were able to keep their dance moves, along with Perry. But as the song progressed, the left shark found it harder and harder to keep up. All people could talk about on Twitter after the show was the funny and out-of-sync left shark. One of the most important social media storylines in 2015 centered on hashtag Black Lives Matter. The hashtag called for people to protest the treatment of African Americans by police and other authority figures. In 2015, three incidents kept hashtag Black Lives Matter in the headlines. In Baltimore, Maryland, residents protested and rioted in April after 25-year-old Freddie Gray died while in police custody. A couple months later, a white man broke into a predominantly black church in South Carolina and killed 9 people during a prayer meeting. Later in the summer, a black woman named Sandra Bland was arrested in Texas after a traffic stop during which she argued and fought with a police officer. She was later found dead in her jail cell. Each of these incidents kept hashtag Black Lives Matter in the national conversation. According to Twitter, it was the 8th most important trending hashtag of 2015. Another important social action hashtag this year was hashtag Love Wins. It appeared on both Twitter's trending news and politics lists. After the U.S. Supreme Court decided to allow marriage between two people of the same sex, President Obama wrote, "Today is a big step in our march toward equality. Gay and lesbian couples now have the right to marry, just like anyone else. Hashtag Love Wins." The message was retweeted and liked almost 1 million times. It became the trending hashtag for the topic of same-sex marriage. Tara Hunt is a social media expert. Hunt says people are busier than ever, but still want to engage each other on topics like news, sports, music, and movies. As a result, people can have an on-demand conversation by using these social media sites.
we still want to participate with other people of like mind, right? So what I think the memes, especially around things like the dress or the llama drama, things like that, show us is that people still want to connect on a broader, in a broader conversation, all at the same time. We gather around memes and hashtags and trending topics constantly.
It is not possible to cover all the trending topics from 2015 in one story. Did you learn how to dance the whip and nene this year? Perhaps it is best to leave you with the Facebook and YouTube Year in Review videos. We hope you enjoy them. And that's what trended this year. I'm Dan Friedel.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English. Next, we have an education story that you may have missed. The law that requires standardized testing in the U.S., known as No Child Left Behind, has been replaced. A new law gives states more power to decide how tests are used to find out how well schools are teaching students. Jonathan Evans brings us this education report.
The new education reform law urges the 50 state governments to limit how many and how often students take tests. The law limits the high-stakes nature of the testing for underperforming schools. And the national government will not be able to tell states and communities how to evaluate schools and teacher performance. But states and schools must still give reading and math exams in grades 3 through 8 and in high school. The states will have more authority in setting standards for the tests. Congress passed the measure easily. Republicans and Democrats supported it. The new law replaces the No Child Left Behind measure approved in 2002. It called for extensive testing and standards set by the national government. Parents, teachers, and lawmakers found that policy unworkable. They said it gave Washington bureaucrats too much control over the country's 100,000 public schools. This bill makes long overdue fixes to the last education law. It replaces a one-size-fits-all approach to reform, Obama said. Republican Senator Lamar Alexander is one of the measure's chief authors. He said, "This new law will result in fewer and better tests because states and classroom teachers will be deciding what to do about the results of the tests." The law's other key sponsor is Democratic Senator Patty Murray. She said the new focus will be on early childhood education. She added that minority and poor children will benefit and get a better start in their earliest years of school. I'm Jonathan Evans.
You are listening to As It Is. If you have been listening to us regularly, you know we feature our American history program, The Making of a Nation. Keep listening to learn about the power struggles that brought Vice President Chester Arthur to the U.S. presidency.
to the Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. President James Garfield was shot and seriously wounded in the summer of 1881. The man who shot him said he supported the political group that supported Vice President Chester Arthur. The gunman was found to be insane, but some people were ready to believe the worst about Vice President Arthur. They knew that many of the Vice President's political allies disliked President Garfield. They thought the Vice President might have helped the gunman in some way. This week in our series, Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell what happened after President Garfield was shot.
For a time, it seemed the president might get better. But the bullet wound became infected. He died of the infection 2 months after he was shot. Vice President Arthur took the oath of office a few hours after the president's death. Chester Arthur had been a successful lawyer. He had worked in politics for a number of years, but he had never before held an elected office. Many Americans questioned his ability to serve in the White House. One person put it this way: Chet Arthur, President of the United States? Good God!
Almost everyone feared Arthur would be a tool of a Republican Party leader in New York, Roscoe Conkling. They were sure Conkling would be the real power in Arthur's administration. They were wrong. Chester Arthur surprised everyone. He broke all his ties with the Conkling political machine. He remained independent of any party group. Arthur asked Garfield's cabinet to resign. He chose new men for all but one department.
In his first message to Congress, President Arthur asked for changes in the way government jobs were filled. He proposed a new civil service system that would let ability, not politics, decide who got government jobs. Republican Party leaders opposed these proposals. The civil service system would stop them from giving federal jobs to their supporters. It would destroy much of their power. These Republican leaders controlled Congress. They refused to act on the civil service proposals.
Civil service reform, however, was an important issue. President Garfield had been assassinated by a man who believed he should have gotten a government job because of his politics. Also, new cases of dishonesty had been discovered in the post office department. The public began to demand laws to clean up the civil service. In 1882, a new Congress was elected. The new Congress was controlled by the Democratic Party. President Arthur again appealed for civil service reform. This time, he got results. The new Congress passed a civil service bill that required 10% of all federal jobs to be filled through competitive examinations. This 10% included half the officials in the post office department. It included most workers at federal customs houses. The bill also said it was illegal for politicians to ask government employees for campaign money, and it set up a civil service committee to enforce the new law.
President Arthur also found himself faced with an unusual problem. The government was earning more money than it needed. Most of the money came from tariffs, taxes on imports. Each year, tariffs brought in $100 million more than the government needed. The import taxes had been set high to protect American industries from foreign competition. President Arthur wanted to reduce the tariffs. Congress wanted to keep them high. Industrial leaders wanted to keep them high, too. They did not want to compete with low-priced foreign products.
Congress saw no problem with the extra money brought in by high tariffs. It found many ways to spend it. For example, Congress raised payments to soldiers who had fought in the Civil War during the 1860s. It also approved money to build roads, bridges, and waterways throughout the country. Many of these things were not needed. They were approved for political purposes. They put government money into the home areas of powerful congressmen. In 1882, Congress passed the Rivers and Harbors Bill. The bill would cost almost $19 million. President Arthur vetoed the bill. He said it would waste too much money, but Congress passed the bill into law over his veto.
Next, President Arthur urged Congress to form a committee to find a way to reduce tariffs. Congress formed the committee. The committee proposed that tariffs be reduced by 20%. But Congress did not consider the proposal when it began debating a new tariff bill. President Arthur was more successful in getting Congress to reduce the public debt. During his term, the debt was cut by more than $400 million.
Chester Arthur's efforts for honest government and lower taxes won him much support among the people, but he could not win the support of his Republican Party. Arthur wanted to serve another 4 years in the White House. His name was put before the Republican nominating convention in 1884. The name of Senator James Blaine of Maine also was put before the convention. On the first ballot, Blaine received 334 votes. Arthur got only 278. 3 ballots later, Blaine won the presidential nomination. However, many Republicans refused to support Blaine. They accused him of being dishonest. They said he was controlled by powerful politicians.
The Democratic Party chose New York Governor Grover Cleveland as its presidential candidate. Like Chester Arthur at the national level, Grover Cleveland was known for fighting dishonesty in government at the local level. He began as mayor of the city of Buffalo, New York. He cleaned up the city government and saved the taxpayers much money. Next, he was elected governor of New York State. There, too, he helped end dishonesty in government. Cleveland refused to give jobs to Democrats because of their political ties. Instead, he filled state jobs with men of ability. This early success helped him win the Democratic presidential nomination.
The campaign of 1884 between Republican Blaine and Democrat Cleveland was one of the most bitter in American political history. A group of Republicans who opposed Blaine published letters to prove he was dishonest. Blaine had written the letters several years earlier during a shameful incident concerning the sale of railroad stock. Now he was forced to defend himself against those old charges.
Blaine's supporters fought back by discovering a scandal in Cleveland's past. Grover Cleveland had never married, but more than 10 years earlier, he had been involved with a young woman. The woman gave birth to a boy. Cleveland was not sure the boy was his son, but he accepted responsibility for the child. He sent money to help care for him. A Republican newspaper published the story. Soon, Republican crowds were shouting a joke about it. "Ma, Ma, where's my pa?" "Gone to the White House. Ha, ha, ha."
Both candidates campaigned hard. It was clear to everyone that the vote would be close. Election day was cold and rainy. Early results showed the two candidates with almost the same number of electoral votes. The winner would be the one who captured a majority of the popular votes in New York State. That candidate would then get all of New York's electoral votes. It was not until 3 days after the voting that election officials announced Cleveland had won. His victory set off wild celebrations among Democrats across the country. Grover Cleveland really was going to the White House. Ha, ha, ha. His election would bring some important changes to the country.
That's our program for today. However you celebrate it, we at Learning English wish you a happy and safe new year. Read, listen to, and watch other VOA Learning English programs on our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. There are also other programs on New Year's celebrations and traditions. Listen again tomorrow for another As It Is.
Maybe it's much too early in the game. But I thought I'd ask you just the same. What are you doing, New Year's? New Year's Eve. Wonder whose arms will hold you good and tight. When it's exactly 12 o'clock that night, welcoming in the new year. New Year's Eve. Maybe I'm crazy to suppose.